warm welcome from the Awaken Talks team to today's Awaken Talk titled A Jugalbandi or Duet with Life with our guests Dakshayani Athalye and Mandar Karanjkar. So thank you again for joining, and thank you so much Shalini and Deven to have agreed to moderate this call. A brief introduction of both Shalini and Deven is due. Co-volunteers with us at Service Space. Both of them are, I would say, sadhaks at heart. And Deven started as a financial services expert and was working briefly with the securities management. And then the question of his own security and the courage to face the insecurity that life eternally is brought him to a 10-day meditation retreat, which changed the course of his life. And then looking for a fertile ground to kind of ground his practices, Deven and Shalini have moved to Aurofil with their daughter Simran for the last 3 to 4 years, and have been working actively with children. And that's where I feel there are so many resonances with the kind of work Dakshayani and Mandar do, you know, with children. And also, I guess, Deven's search for marrying the right livelihood, which is, you know, earning money for a living, has led him to this spot. And Dakshayani and Mandar, in a way, have experimented to marry what is the labor of love, as well as their own interest, deep interest in Indian classical music. So thank you, Deven. And Shalini, a product of one of the most prestigious engineering schools, BITS Pilani, met Deven in Goa as they were working in a communication kind of a centric NGO. And Shalini is a gifted photographer, as well as, well, an artist, I would say, in many ways. And Shalini also has this deep interest in children. And as a parent to Simran, as well as a teacher to various kids at Aurofil, she is spreading her gifts. Thank you, Shalini, to have agreed to moderate this call. Thank you, both of you. And over to you, Shalini and Deven. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Rahul.
Thank you, Rahul, for all the warm words. Namaste, everyone. Thank you for joining us from wherever you are. And today we have the privilege of getting to know Mandar and Dakshayani and their Jugalbandi with life. So a little bit about them before we dive into the call. Both Mandar and Dakshayani have had music has been an integral part of their life since childhood. And after working in the corporate world for a few years, they decided to dedicate their life to, you know, in pursuit of music and how can they bring Indian classical music to the masses and make it available for children in, you know, schools across the country. And they've been working with children from different schools in Pune, which are municipal schools, and visually impaired children. And it's been a journey for them through the foundation that they set up. And when Mandar is not busy taking Nadi Yoga sessions, or when he's not busy writing a blog or publishing a book, you can see him petting dogs. And when Dakshayani is not busy with the school children and offering her gift of music and sharing her presence with them so beautifully, she loves to cook, and she loves gardening, and yeah, and she likes cycling around, I think. So yeah, thank you for joining us today. And it's an absolute honor to share this space with you both today. And yeah, so I would like to invite you to share a song to begin with. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
जाने मौत की उठ कभी राजा नींद निशानी मौत की उठ कभी राजा और रसायन छांट के नाम रसायन ला जागर प्यारी जागर प्यारी जागर प्यारी जागर प्यारी अब का सोवे जागर प्यारी अब का सुबे रह गई काहे तो खोगे जाग प्यारी जाग प्यारी जिन जागा माणिक पाया जिन जागा तीन माणिक पाया तैबोरी सब सुर जाग कह कबीर सोही कह कबीर सोही धन धन जागे कह कबीर सोही धन धन जागे सब दबाण अंतर लागे जाग प्यारी जाग प्यारी अब का सुरे रैन गई काहे को खोवे जाग
Hello everyone, and very happy to have sung this beautiful bhajan by Kabir for all of you, where he says, "Jag piyari ab ka sove, rehna gayi din kahe ko khove." So he's saying the sleep is everywhere. You know, like even though we are awake, we are actually under sleep. You know, under spell of so many things, and that true awareness never flowers. So he's saying, you know, you have the night is gone, rehna gayi din kahe ko. So your half life is already gone. Why are you wasting the remaining half? You know, the moment you realize this, just wake up. So it's the gist of this beautiful Nirguni Bhajan myself. Devin, you are on mute.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you once again, Mandar and Dakshayani. That was so beautiful. And I would love to begin our conversation today with this aspect of Indian classical music as a practicing art that you speak about. Like, there is a performing aspect of it, and then there is a practicing aspect of it, which one does for one's own self-development, for yoga sadhana. So, which is kind of referred to as in the Shastra as Nada Yoga. So maybe for our listeners, if we can begin by you sharing your views from your own experience on Nada Yoga and as a practicing art.
So I think when we are talking about any practice, like Nada Yoga is just one form of practice. There are several such practices. So one thing that we have to take in consideration is that it's a twofold process. Like, for example, a fruit falling from a tree after it is ripe. So there are two aspects to this. One is basically the fruit getting paripakva, you know, matured. And then in a moment it falls. So that process to ripen, it needs time. It needs some effort, it needs some doing, you know, on your part. And once that process is complete, when that falling will happen, that no one knows, you know, that. So then one has to just be there, you know, at that point. And then it happens, you know, it's a part of grace. It's not something that you can do. So I think Nada Sadhana, like all other forms of practice, is same, you know, it helps you to ripen yourself. So when the fruit will fall, that no one knows, but you can keep working on yourself to reach that point. And like, I think I have been learning music when I was a kid, and then whole education and all of that, then there was a break. And I think you need someone who can tell you this aspect, who can show you this aspect, who has practiced this aspect. Otherwise, it's very difficult. So I was reading a very beautiful book a few days back, which says that, you know, let us imagine if you have to transfer a bird to someone, this alive bird, which I want to take from point A to point B. So we have to put it in a cage or something to take it there. What happens is that after it reaches there, the receiver has to unlock the cage and get the bird out. What happens, most of the time we get attracted to the cage itself. You know, how beautiful the cage is, what is the engineering of the cage, you know, what material it is made up from, look at the geometry and proportions and all of that. And till we are like working and fascinated that cage, the bird inside dies out. So I thought, with all the art forms, with all the practices, this is something that happens, you know, that we get too much interested in the cage. Like, same has happened with music also. Like, people get fascinated by the skills that are required, or, you know, all these things, the number of ragas, you know, the number of compositions, you know, how fast you can go, how low you can go, how up you can go. This is all cage. The bird is inside it. So I think when we say ki music is a practicing art form, we are trying to look at that alive bird which is in the practice, and not like just mastering something and presenting it to someone. And I would say both of us, we were really fortunate to have met people who have looked at music from this point of view and who taught us to look at it from this point of view. So yeah, and I think, as I said, it's again yoga, you know, this word Nad Yoga. So which basically means union, you know, that separateness has to be dissolved. So I think it's all about that, you know, how you come to that fact, you know, that you are not separate. There are infinite ways. So Sant Gorakhnath would say there are as many ways as the number of people. And he tried it by so many ways. That's why that word Gorakhanda came up, you know, like he was doing what not, you know, to get there. So I think one just has to remember that anything is for that bird and not for the cage. So
Beautiful. Thank you, Mandar. Those were really simple yet deeply insightful analogies of a fruit ripening. And, you know, it's only grace that determines when the fruit will ripen and fall. And also this beautiful reminder of cage and the bird and not to get caught up in the cage. That's so beautiful. And Lakshani, you've also been a trained kirtankar, which again is another form, you know. The intent is again same, the ripening of the fruit or the freeing of the bird. So from your experience of in practicing this whole art of being a kirtankar, could you share some thoughts on this?
So I think as Mandar has said mostly what's, you know, the point of it in a way. I would just like to add with a few examples from my end. And one of them being that when we look at Indian classical music or when we look at the form of kirtan also, as a form, they are very much performing art forms. So you know, you go out there and you perform and you sing for people. And but the whole journey of this going outward cannot happen without going inward. So that is a very critical part of all these art forms, which we identify as performing art forms. So to all of us, we know them as performing art forms. But a lot of, I think, you know, the seed is always very small, but the tree can grow as huge, you know, as the potential is. So in the same way that, you know, the performing aspect in that sense, you know, we can see it all over and it's flourishing. And you, of course, see a lot of performances happening. When we talk about art, what comes to our mind is always exhibitions, is always, you know, the exhibition part of it, the performing part of it. But there's a lot that goes behind that performance. And that is actually the real thing in that sense, you know. And all the great masters, in a way, what they do is they bring their practicing aspect to the stage. And that is why their performances are so impactful, or that is why they are able to connect with you in such great harmony, because they are harmonious in themselves. So all these art forms are focused on that point, basically, to bring that harmony within oneself. And then to later then share that gift with everyone around. And what we felt in our work is that that this aspect of focusing on the practice, focusing on the sadhana, in some sense, because we get very attracted with the performing side of all arts, that gets neglected or that's not highlighted enough, is what we felt. And that is why, unfortunately, a lot of people, a lot of us miss out on the benefits, you know, miss out on identifying these art forms as a path. Because what happens is usually they are identified with, oh, I don't have a good voice, I don't have a good body, I don't have this, I don't have that, from the point of view of performance. But that's not the point at all. The point is the practice. That is the first most important thing, and the benefit that has to offer to a lot of us. And that those benefits come to everyone, it's, as long as you are practicing it. That would be sharing from my side, you know, that we need to bring back that focus on the practicing aspect of all these art forms, which is rather the strong side, which is that root, which is that you know, pivot that holds everything together. And then we're, of course, all open to sharing.
Mandar, you just mentioned that you need someone to hold you through this journey, for this union to happen. And, you know, I was just reading through your book, Moments with the Master, and on the back cover, there's this quote that says, "When the disciple is ready, the master appears." And I'm just curious to know the different masters that have appeared in your life, and what has been your, you know, key learnings and insights that emerge from being with them physically or in a different plane. So it'd be wonderful to hear from both of you on the teachers or the masters or the gurus in your journey so far.
Yeah, so I think the first master who like didn't actually come in my life physically, but who inspired me a lot was Osho. So like when I was in my engineering, I rarely studied anything, you know, like I am engineer by luck. So basically, and many of us are, you know, like we are just engineers by luck. So I am also one of them. So there was a time when I would read Osho madly, like when I was in the engineering, exams happening, lectures happening, nothing to do. We had a fantastic boat club at the Government College of Engineering. The river was passing by and everything was much lesser polluted at that time. So I would read, and I think I was reading to that extent that my father would give me like 5,000 rupees a month, you know, for my lunch and dinner and all of that. So I would actually eat a packet of bread and a bottle of jam, you know, and like that was my staple diet, and I would use all the money to buy the books. So a lot happened, you know, during that phase when I was reading that. Then same happened with Jay Krishnamurti, you know, I was reading his books also and all of that. I think when I met Guruji Pandit Vijay Sardeshmukhji, his mode was very different, you know, like he didn't preach anything, like he didn't have anything to say as such, you know, he do this, like he looked a very common man. Yeah, like just like all of us, you know, like very silent, very humble. If he passes by, no one will recognize him also, you know, that kind of personality. So when I went to learn, you know, learning from him, I thought maybe it's like just one more teacher, you know? Like you are like just imparting you skills basically. Okay, I'm doing this, he will teach, tell me to do this, you know, if I'm doing something this good, he will teach to how to do it this good. But when I like started going to his place, I realized how deep he was gone into this whole world of sound. And that was his language. Like he would communicate through his notes, through the tanpura that he would tune. And he won't talk much. Like if you asked him a question, the reply would come after like, you know, 5-6 minutes if it came. Otherwise it won't come. So I think many things changed after meeting him. And, you know, like if you eat something which is like a python, when it's eating like a large animal, it keeps digesting it for months and months, you know, like it's in a cave or somewhere silently sitting and just digesting. I think with the master, it's like you get a fraction of the master and you have to keep digesting it for your whole life. So I would honestly say that's happening, you know, like I could, like if we could, we could pick, I'd say just a fraction of what he had, and I think that will also take a lifetime. And of course then there are many other mentors, and I think you had Kiran Kalap, who was here a few weeks back, so he's like a mentor for us, you know, we learn so many things from him. I think it's no more a one-on-one relation now, you know, like your guru might not be knowing also, okay, he's my shishya, you know? Because of internet, because of all of these things, there are so many gurus all around. So yeah, but I think so far Vijayji has been, like, you know, just from sound perspective, invaluable, his guidance.
So for me, it interestingly, I've had a background with a lot of religious and spiritual background in the family in some sense, and I've always been fortunate to be immersed in those kind of environments, which I didn't really even understand for a very long time, but I have realized that there are a lot of things subconsciously that I've picked up, and that has been a blessing. And I was learning Kirtan from a very young age. So again, without much of knowing, without much of being able to articulate what I was listening to or what I was learning, I've been a part of some of these beautiful things, gifts that have been shared with me by a lot of adults around me. So that has been, in some sense, my initiation. And more or less, all this time, I've always been a doer. And whatever, you know, inspires me and whatever touches me, I sort of go and do that. And through that doing, I realize a few things. And so those actions, and they've in some sense led me to, you know, one after the other, they've led me to things that I feel fortunate to have done in my life. So that's, yeah. And Osho, I mean, particularly for me, has been a great source of inspiration and direction. Or rather, he makes you quite directionless because he tells you a whole lot of different things. And then it brings you to a point where you have to say that this is what you choose to do, and you choose to experiment or try for yourself. And then through that doing, you realize more. So I've been very fortunate to have read him. And of course, Jay Krishnamurti now, very late, very recently, but yes, Jay Krishnamurti. So yeah, and Guruji, of course, I think he was definitely special to Mandar because Mandar was directly learning from him, and I was fortunate to have accompanied Mandar on all these classes, basically. I've hardly missed anything, so I was very fortunate to be in his presence. I think, of course, the music that he offered us, whatever, you know, he was, as Mandar said, he was someone who hardly spoke about his thoughts or his feelings or anything like that. But to be in his presence has been a great learning. So he could have easily shared a lot, but knowing that, you know, you don't have to talk, you don't have to share, you don't have to articulate, and you can just be and be very happy with with that. So that has been a great learning, actually, to be with him.
And I believe towards the end of his physical life, you decided to also went and stay with him and take care of him, you know, as he was going through a certain illness. So during that moment, when you were actually staying with him and almost 24/7 with him, could you share some of insights or remembrances from that time?
Sure. So, for the last 10-12 years of his life, he was not teaching much. Like, I think 2010-11 onwards, he was not like teaching anyone as such, you know, like he was just, I think, engrossed in his own work, you know, and like that. So when we first started learning from him, we were introduced to him by, you know, someone, a very close friend and, you know, very close acquaintance of him. So he said yes, but he was not like very, very willing, you know, at that point. So he just didn't want to hurt this person maybe who had introduced us. So he would be like, okay, come once in a while. And if you call him, no, don't come today. You know, I have to go here, I have to go there. And we would really feel like, does he really want to teach? Are we forcing us on him? You know, what's the story? And then eventually what happened, we don't know, but this whole relationship came to the stage where he would call us, you know, like with the hemoglobin level of 5 and fever and all of that. And he would be like, you know, come, I want to teach. And since he had very low immunity, he was actually supposed to not meet anyone. But he didn't care even about that. He would be like, no, I want to teach. You have to come. I will teach you. And many things, you know, that we got to learn from him. So one particular thing was we had requested him to do a small musical presentation in a temple in Pune. which was like a very informal kind of, you know, like 10-15 minutes of a presentation. And he very happily said, okay, I will come and all of that. And while we were walking one day, we would take him for a morning walk every day. He said, can you tell me the date again? So I just told him, okay, it's the date. What happened? You know, I was scared, like if he has any other commitments or if he changed his mind. So he said, no, nothing. I just wanted to check with you. So all that thing happened, you know, whatever that presentation was, happened very well. And later, while talking to him, we got to know that he had been offered 3 concerts by the government of Gujarat. And one of them was happening on this day. And he was like, you know, I don't want to do because I have already committed, you know, one of the dates to someone. So see, in this world where musicians are so insecure about getting more performances, being in front, he was like, you know, it was as simple as this, you know, okay, I have confirmed earlier to him. So that's it. Now, even if, you know, like I'm, like president asks me to come and perform, I will have to humbly regret, you know, because I have already committed myself to something else. So I think all these things, from his behavior and even from his music, there were so many things to learn about, like whatever we could not do in like 1 hour of singing, you know, like it was disaster, you know, like he could create magic with just one breath. And I'm not like exaggerating because, you know, he is my Guruji and I have to praise him, nothing like that, you know, it's pure fact, you know, that with one phrase, he could make you cry, he could, you know, make you lose yourself. And I think whatever is available online of his music, there are quite a few videos on YouTube. I would say it's not even 10% of what he actually was. Because he didn't like much to perform. So whenever he was in performance zone, he was already in a compromised state. So I think what we experienced sitting when he was in his comfort and he was in his mind state, that has been priceless. You know, that kind of music you cannot listen anywhere. So.
Yeah, and I would definitely like to say that, you know, it's just been grace that we've had the opportunity to be with him. I think a lot of the people around us and friends also keep saying that, oh, you know, it was so nice of you that you could take care of him or be with him when he needed some help. And I keep saying, and I keep feeling that it was our good fortune and grace to have had this opportunity to be with him in those moments, because some of the things that he's shared with us, just that, and as I said, just his being, it's all priceless. One cannot put that in words.
Beautiful. I think just even listening to these few anecdotes makes me, you know, give me goosebumps. So I can totally imagine what it would have been being in his presence. So thank you.
Mandar, you mentioned that even if you had taken a fraction of him, his being in you, it would take a lifetime. And I can totally imagine what it would have been like, because some weeks ago when you both sang a Kabir song, actually I started getting tears in my eyes and I had no clue why they were coming. They were just coming. Not that I understood the song or anything, but it just transported me to a different space. So yeah, just holding a lot of gratitude for him, whom we've never met, but through you, we are able to experience his presence. Thank you.
Thank you. So now maybe we shift gears up the conversation to a little bit about your professional life. I think both of you have had careers in engineering and, you know, law respectively, and at some point you were balancing the two. You were having a day job and then you were also doing music. And of course, you have a very beautiful understanding and definition of occupation, which I'm sure you will share. And then at some point, you took this leap of faith and, you know, quit the jobs and started, you know, Better Foundation. So a little bit about that journey, how you were balancing and then what inspired you and gave you the courage to take this jump would be wonderful to hear.
So I think when I came for my engineering, in the first year, I was in that whole race, you know, okay, I want to be a topper, then I want to earn. And of course, after that, what, then leave everything and enjoy, you know, like, or leave everything and read, leave everything and practice music. But I slowly realized, you know, that everything comes at a cost, like the kind of energy which a person has till maybe 30s or 40s, a lot of damage happens, you know, if one goes through the corporate race for a long time. Yes, after that, you know, if you resign after, let us say, 15, 20 years of working, you will have a lot of money, you will have a lot of time, resources, everything. But the hardware gets damaged a lot if you're not conscious. Okay, I'm not saying it that happens, but you have to take a lot of effort. And I think as I read Osho during my engineering, I started taking this whole education part like very casually. You know, I was like, okay, like existence takes care, you know, so let's see what happens and like that. So I somehow, and you know what happens, you know, the funny part is that when my professors, like, I had not completed submission of one subject and I was failed in that subject. So I went to the professor, you know, and he was like, why didn't you do submission? So I said, keep, you know, I want to do music. I don't want to do engineering. And that's why I don't feel like doing. So he said, okay, come, beta, sit next to me. I also wanted to do something and I couldn't do, and I am stuck here. So I don't want you to be that there, you know. So, okay, just take one more day, do something, give it to me. I will pass. So what I realized was that if you make your intentions clear, there are people who want to help you. Because see, everyone is going through that same chakki, you know, which Kabir is talking about. Pisti chakki dekh diya Kabir roye. Everyone is going through that. So if someone sees a possibility ki, okay, you know, I am, let us say, at the mid of my life and someone is just starting, he at least realized, ki, I want to get out of this. So let me help him. So what I realized is that you really don't need to take a leap of faith or anything, because the kind of world we are living in today, the positive forces are very strong. So just give an hint ki you want to do something good and the it starts coming to you. So, you know, that is what something happened. And but again, like you need a lot of time to understand this. So even if you realize that, you again get caught in your cycle of fear, you know, so that same thing keeps happening. So with me, I completed my BTEC, you know, with all the grace of my professors and grace of, you know, so many people, you know, so the whole college celebrated when I passed. So that's how I completed my engineering. And so I got a job also, but which was in Chennai. And I realized that I have to be in Pune for music, for both of us to be together. So I started working in a startup, and you know, I started taking home tuitions and all of that. Luckily, I got a job when I wanted it, you know, when I was like, you know, now I need at least some stability in the life, otherwise I will be all over the places. So fortunately, I got a job in a very good company, Forbes Marshall. So I was there for almost 3-4 years. I worked with them. And I think that's where I got some space to experiment, you know, what I really like. So I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. So I took admission to law while I was working. The company was very supportive. They were like, do what you want to do. I realized I don't like it. So I had this love for music. So I said, let me test that out also. You know, it could also be like a illusionary love as I had for law. So I started learning music again, and I realized I really like it. So I requested my boss saying, you know, please allow me to work 3 days a week. And she was very happy. She said, why not, you know? So that I did for 1 year. And then after that, I was like, okay, like if I don't start doing what I really want to, this will keep on happening for, you know, years and years. Okay, this is that, then giving excuses, you know, okay, I couldn't do this because I was doing this. So I thought now so much of support is there. It's my responsibility to take a step. And I think that was the point when I decided to quit the job. But there were many friends who had their own small enterprises. They said, okay, give us 1 hour a week and do something for us. Give us 2 hours a week and do something for us. So that's how I started consulting a little bit. And slowly, you know, I could manage these two things in such a way that I have enough of work for a decent life. And I have enough of space also available to really explore what I want to do.
For me, I've come to my education choice, or I've come to my occupation choice all out of elimination, actually. So I never wanted to really pursue engineering or medical that I was sure of. So then what? Then what? And I didn't want to do a BA or so then what? That's how I landed up with law. And I did enjoy my college years and I did like studying it. But I was very sure after the first 2 or 3 years of my law degree, I did a degree after 12th. And I realized that this is not something that I can do for a lifetime. It doesn't inspire me enough. It's not engaging enough also. And there are a lot of things in the profession that I will not be able to do. So I was very sure that that is not what I want to do. And then I thought, I've always felt that I would be a good teacher. I'll be able to teach. I'll be able to talk to children. So that's definitely what I felt. And of course, I was also in need of a job when I was just about 18. So I decided that, okay, we could look out for a job, you know, in education. And that's how I landed up with my first job at Akanksha Foundation. And it was just purely miracle, because that was probably the first thing that we searched on LinkedIn. And we contacted and I gave the interview, did a demo, and then like within 5 days, I had the job. So it's just really a miracle. And I've enjoyed all my, I think I worked for about 4.5 years at Akanksha. And I enjoyed all those years. I had great learning experiences there because that was my first job and I was juggling between my law and work. So I was doing both simultaneously. I had a morning college and then an afternoon and evening job. In that period, I learned a great deal, actually. There were a lot of things that I didn't know of. And that experience with Akanksha made me feel that, okay, this is something that that I like, I understand, and I enjoy, and I would like to engage more with it. And that is what brought me to my the master's in education at Tata Institute of Social Sciences. So that was again a lovely period. And again, I mean, I've always done my education and I've worked together. So never from the time, I think from about 18, when I was 18 years old, I've always worked. So that was really good because I always understood how things work, and then what's the academic or what's the other background to it, what's the philosophical background to it. So I was able to test that or question that, you know. So that's what brought me to education. And it was actually through, I remember both of us, I mean, were 25 years old and having a conversation around, you know, the reach of Indian classical music, which we both loved and enjoyed. In fact, I was introduced to Indian classical music when I met Mandar. So I didn't have a background in classical music. I've always, I mean, I've been a Kirtankar and for that whatever music is required, I've learned that. But I was never introduced to Indian classical music before, as of course as Mandar did. And we realized that where is this music? You know, we get to hear a lot of it, but the schools that I was working in, I felt that these schools had nothing to do with Indian classical music. So that is what brought the idea of Baithak to us, and we felt that there's a great need, you know, to take this music to children, and so that's how it all started. So we were doing our day jobs, and I was of course working either at Akanksha, or after that actually I shifted as a CSR manager with the company. And when we were doing that, both of us would go on weekends and volunteer at a Teach for India center, and we'd teach music. And that's what made us feel that, okay, it's not, though the students do not have a background, they would still be able to enjoy it. Because we also had our own questions, whether we were again imposing ourselves, you know, and our ideas and thoughts on children. But we could see that that was not the case, that children really genuinely liked and appreciated music. So that's how it all started as a weekend project, actually, for about a year when both of us were working. And for us, it has always also been, as Devin mentioned, that, you know, the definition of occupation, we were talking about it when we were discussing about the interview, that for us, it has always been the occupation of the mind, occupation of, you know, what we want to do and what, it's not so much about actually how much even physically you actually do, but it's more about, are you engrossed in it? Are you in it? So, and Guruji would also again say this in the context of music many times, that you don't have to constantly sing to be in music. All you have to do is to be in it, and you don't have to express it. You don't have to actively do anything for it, but you have to be immersed in it. And in that sense, we always have music, and it's again a great fortune and great luck to have it with us.
Wow. It's amazing to hear your stories on how Baithak Foundation came about. And so it'll be wonderful to hear how working with children has been for you, and especially given that the children have been from municipal schools where, you know, access to good music and classical music has never been there before. And also, would like to hear more about, you know, your learnings and insights from observing these children. I'm sure when you introduce music to them, something must be shifting in them, and they must be developing some skills, some a different way of being maybe after listening to classical music. And how can that shape a child's growth? So any insights or your observations would really help. Thank you.
See, if we look at this whole thing from a scientific perspective, you know, that what music does to our brain, our body, and, you know, mind, everything. I think we are at very infancy of the research. So the research is, of course, there, you know, which says music helps brain development, or, you know, like many things like mathematical aptitude and spatial understandings, and so many things are, you know, like positive impacts of music. But we feel it's just tip of the iceberg, you know, because if we look at our bodies, for instance, we say it's matter. But if we take this matter down, there are molecules. If we take the molecules to their level, there are atoms. And in between all of them, there is a lot of space. Like if we look at an atom, I think there is like 99.99% vacuum in it, you know, like space in it, and only 0.01% of matter in it. Even in that matter, there is almost same amount of space and matter. And whatever is actually matter, if you go there, that is also vibration, like vibrating trillion times a second. You know, so if you look at this whole perspective, I think we don't even know what music does to us. You know, we just trying to understand from a very limited perspective. So when we go to schools, you know, with music, I think what happens is that the kind of music kids are exposed to, it's very different. It's very loud, especially in the communities. The music comes only, you know, during Ganpati or Navratri or, you know, the festivals of local deities, and it's all loud music.
Just to add to that, unfortunately, especially in cities, the communities in cities, the very traditional and local music is also disappearing. So it is not as if they are exposed to their traditional music, but it's more DJs. That shift has happened very quickly, and that is the music that children are exposed to.
So in fact, like before we started Baithak, we like randomly were talking to students in a school, you know, which was like in heart of Pune city, probably like 2 kilometers away from where Savai Gandhar festival happens, you know, like world famous festival. And we asked kids, you know, that who are the classical musicians you have heard of? So, you know, hands slowly went up, and we were very happy, you know, okay, kids have heard somewhat, you know. So we asked the first child, okay, tell me, Honey Singh. Second child, Honey Singh. So there was like one girl at the back of room, she said Lata Mangeshkar. This is one girl, you know, and that is also like not classical in that sense. So I think, but when we started working, like initially we had these issues, you know, that our teachers had to resign because there were discipline issues. Kids didn't let them teach only. But when we studied this whole thing, we realized that it's our fault, you know, like because they have not experienced the magic of art form, then why will they learn the theory of art? So I think we thought first it's our responsibility to let them experience the magic of art form. And we actually turned our whole model upside down. So we started with doing concerts in the schools, and we didn't even talk about teaching. You know, like someone with a sitar and tabla would play for like, you know, 1 hour and come back. Then slowly, you know, kids started asking, how can you sit straight for such a long time? Or, you know, this santur is so heavy, so how can you have it in your lap for such a long time? Or to a dancer, how can you stand in this posture for such a long time? From there to, you know, we want to learn this. Who will teach us? How can we learn this?
And where do we also get this on YouTube? So those were also the questions, especially of elder students. So does this music exist apart from, you know, when they see it in school? Because, I mean, now we say that internet has brought everything close to us, and, you know, everything is out there and online and free and all of that. But how do you access that? So literally, even to know the names of the artists that you can type on YouTube and search for that music, as basic as that. So a lot of students were then curious to know that this can be found on YouTube, is it? So yes, of course. And that's how, so those are the small things that you notice, you know, and yeah.
Yeah, and I think maybe like if we talk about changes that happened, you know, so there are some schools where we have been working for past 3 years now. So there are definitely changes in terms of behavior of the children. So we don't impose discipline, but we observe that kids become disciplined, you know, just by getting exposed to that whole experience. Now the footwear will be in the line. They will sit silently. They won't talk in between. If they have to do something, they will get up. They will go out silently. They will do it and they will come back. And the feedback that we get is that kids who have challenges, you know, while paying attention to something. There are many kids, you know, who find it just difficult, you know, concentrating on something for even 10 minutes. They listen to a concert for 1 hour without getting disturbed. So I think kids to whom reaching through conventional languages is very difficult, you can reach them very easily through music.
So, yeah. And those are actually, I would say, just some of the observations. We are very sure that there are a lot of things that that children pick up, which maybe we are not even observing in that sense. Definitely one thing that we've also heard from students themselves is that, because usually they have questions around how many years do you take to learn this art form, and then, you know, to perform like you? So those are also the very obvious questions that come to them. And when they hear the fact that most of these dancers and musicians and instrumentalists have been working for at least like a minimum of 10 years, 10 or 11 years, and then beyond that. And then the students realize, because most of the times, unfortunately, they're constantly doing one thing and then leaving that and then doing something else and then leaving that. So then they realize that, oh my God, you know, to master something, you really need to put in those many number of years and hours and be dedicated. So they do understand, I think, that dedication aspect. And that doesn't come because the teacher is forcing you, but that comes because you want to learn that art form better. So it comes from inside. So we've seen that in some of the schools where we started now regular classes, and unfortunately because of COVID, we've had to stop that. But we had started seeing that how students can, the same students, you know, where you feel that there's been indiscipline, they're not concentrating enough, they don't want to do this, they're just too lazy maybe. You know, you probably have all those things in your mind, but you realize that once they really want to do it, how dedicated and you know, how immersed they can be. So we've definitely started seeing that with the classes that are happening, that a lot of the children are very dedicated and they definitely want to do it with full energy. So you see that too.
Beautiful. That's very heartening to hear about engaging with children. And we have many, many more questions, but it's also 11 and I can see audience questions are also coming. So we'll now move to the questions that have received from audience. There's Deepthi who's asking if you could explain in brief how the whole Nadi Yog, you know, works as a sadhana, you know, whether it works on the chakras or the five pranas. So it's a technical question, but if there's something that you want to share briefly on that.
Yeah. Okay. So see, when we talk about all these things, one thing that we have to be very clear about is that it's all in pieces. So we really don't know full picture of anything. Like, you know, like we will have some shlok which talks about chakra, for example. But there is no research which is like systematically done and then proven, okay, by this is going to happen. So I think what we have to go by is individual experience. You know, what happens to someone when he practices this art form or, you know, any practice. So 2-3 main points, you know, that like chakras, for example, if we talk about chakras in our body, there are different thoughts about what chakras are. Like, are they really knots in the body? Or are the disturbances in the flow of that kundalini energy? Or are they like hubs of energy in your body? What is chakra? So different sense have looked at them from different point of views.
The number is different.
The number is also different. You know, like some sense would say ki there are 4 chakras, there are 8 chakras, 7 chakras, 10 chakras, 11. You know, so the numbers also differ. Many times then one also feels ki was it very experimental? You know, like that particular scent could feel something at those 4 points in his body or her body. And then he or she said, okay, there are 4 chakras. Some tantric felt it at 11 points and said, okay, this is 11 chakras. So I think that's why when we are going in this practice, we should not go with any connotation or any like predefined, you know, thoughts in our head, because then we will create that. You know, if it is there in our mind, we will recreate it. So fundamentally, if we talk about Nadi Yoga sound practice, there are 2-3 important things that this practice does. So one is basically we have resonant cavities in the body. So we have abdominal cavity, chest cavity, facial and nasal cavities, and this is also a cavity. So sound is a medium of vibrating these cavities. So sound is actually a medium of energizing and resonating these cavities. So that is one aspect. And all surrounding these cavities are different glands. You know, you have a gland here, you have glands here, you know, and across your body. So this sound, this resonance is impacting those glands also. It's also creating a harmony in their function. It's also so whenever we are singing, we are basically exploring the harmony of sound. There is a lot of mathematics in music. So all like sa re ga ma pa da ni sa, so these notes, they are not arbitrary. They are not like just there. There is a harmony. And when we are exploring that harmony, we go in it. You know, we are also in that harmony. So one is that aspect, you know, that where you are creating a harmony in between your internal organs, your body cavities, everything. Second aspect is, I often say that music is listening to your breath. If my breath is disturbed, my sound will be disturbed. If my breath is steady, my sound will also be steady. So music allows you to listen to your breath, or we can also use the word prana. How is that whole movement happening? So like they do, to our LPG gas, they will add a chemical with strong pungent odor, you know, so that if there is a leakage, you can make out the gas is leaking. In same way, the sound is something that you are adding to your breath to listen to it. Okay, how is it moving? So that is second part. You are directly working with your breath. You are directly in touch with your breath. And third part is brain development. That whenever we are, like, see, we need a certain kind of hardware also. For like, if you read the works of Krishnamurti and dialogues between Krishnamurti and David Bohm, they talk a lot about neurology, you know, that something has to happen also in the brain to reach that stage, you know, where that immeasurable can manifest. So music practice also creates a lot of neural pathways in the brain. It rewires our brain. It can change the sizes of different lobes in our brain. It can help us retain the gray matter in our brain. So many things, you know, which happen because of music practice.
And by music practice, again, it's important to clarify that this practice is not so much of the skill of the art form. It is, I mean, it is not about how many rags you can sing, compositions you can sing, how fast you can sing, how slow you can sing. It is more just about being in tune. And that is actually a work of lifetime. It's not... to get your sa right, to be able to tune your tanpura correctly, to be in such harmony with that you're listening, and then recreating that with your voice. That is a lot of work. And of course, I mean, at the other end of it, if you see, it's very swabhavi, it's very easy also. So the more mind you put to it, the more force you put to it, and you try to do it, it'll go out of your hand. So that's equally true. But the idea is that in itself, and I remember somebody quoting beautifully and telling us about how Kumar Gandharvaji would see this. He would say that to sing, I mean, to create music, two notes are enough. But for sadhana, one note is enough. So like a great musician saying that, you know, so it's really indicative of something. This is not just to sound humble and sound good or anything like that. It actually means, it's a fact that one note is enough to harmonize ourselves, you know, and that's a big job right there.
Yeah, so I think so many things, you know, and as I say, this is also from a very narrowed understanding of this whole practice.
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's an ocean that one needs to dive oneself to be able to explore and experience. So thank you for these pointers. There are 3-4 questions I can see which have two threads. One is around this whole courage that you have taken. Like, a lot of people feel that they are kind of, the mainstream narrative is so strong around job security and fear and all. So there are some questions which are around that, like what gave you courage and what initial challenges you faced when you took that jump. And there is a second thread which really speaks of how this journey led to is making you relate to each other in a different way. Like you are a couple who are working together, so the personal and professional lives, you know, really kind of get blurred. And how do you kind of then, you know, hold space for each other as individuals while working? These two threads, you could grab them first and share a bit about these 2 points. Thank you.
I think like when this question of courage comes, one of our mentors tells us this very beautiful story that, you know, there was a wandering monk who would go every day to ask for his meal, you know, to some house he would go and request, and whatever he receives, he would eat that. And he always had this insecurity, you know, that shall I get food tonight or tomorrow? Shall I save a little bit? You know, all these thoughts running in his mind, you know. So what happens, one day he goes to a house and the lady opens the door and she says, okay, wait for a minute, I will get you something. So that lady had just delivered, like she was pregnant basically. And the food for the baby was there already in her breasts. So this monk, since he had renounced his material life, he genuinely thought that, you know, this lady has some problem with her health, you know, like she's looking so abnormal. So he says, what has happened? You know, why are you looking like this? So she says, I'm going to give birth to a baby. And this is the food for the baby, which is already, you know, there. So that monk says, oh my God, how foolish I am, you know, like even before the baby is born, the food is there. So why am I worrying about all these things? You know, so since I am here, it means the care for what I need is already being taken. I know it's very easy to say this, but living like this, you know, it's very difficult, even for us also, you know, at times we also get grabbed by this whole thought, you know, okay, then what, and like that. What I thought is that if you just take one step and if you see that you are being taken care of, you can take a bigger step next time. So just try it out for something little and see it happening, experience it happening, and you will naturally take the bigger step next time. So, I think, and yeah, the second question was also about holding space for each other and things. So I think if we realize what we are, you know, or where do we stand, or what much space we really need or deserve, we automatically start giving space to others. So like in our case, I know well, and she also knows well, what we are good at and what we are bad at. And I think as long as we have that understanding, everything falls in place. So it's not like that we are very similar kinds of person and our personalities are very same. No, we are radically different. But I think we have realized that, you know, what we are good at and what we are bad at. So, you know, we try to do more what we are good at and we try not doing what we are not good at.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. And I think because we also live together, you naturally start understanding that when is the other person in need of time, in need of space, or your help, or you not doing anything, you know. So you slowly start understanding that, and it's just a matter of respecting that, you know. It comes to you, and all you need to do is to respect that when that message comes. And as long as you do that, then it works out. Fortunately, definitely for us, our likes in some sense are the same, I would say. So that makes it easy in a way, because both of us like music, we have our own practice schedule. So that makes it, definitely makes it easy. In terms of also how we look at life, in some sense, that also matches, you know. There's a consensus on that, that, you know, how much we want or we don't want and what do we want to do. In some sense, we are aligned in that sense. So that makes it, of course, it makes it a little more easy than having two completely drastic different points of views. So that has made it easy, of course.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you once again. And the next set of question is on, there's one question which is asking about what are your plans to working with, you know, other musicians around the country to take this work in a larger scale. And I think maybe here it may be also good for you to share about the other part of Better Foundation, which is already working with, you know, young artists. So you could share a bit about what you are already doing and then what are you open to in terms of more working with other people.
So a couple of projects that we've already been working on. So I'll start off with that and talk about how we engage with a lot of artists. And then talk about the next plans. But the first thing is that when we are doing concerts in schools or when we are asking, basically teaching different art forms at schools, it's actually a lot of young artists doing this work. You know, it's of course not both of us doing it. So in fact, last year itself, there were about 100 artists at least with whom Vetrak was engaged. So the idea is to, of course, work with younger artists to take these various art forms to school particularly. So all our programs are also designed in such a fashion where artists are also seen as beneficiaries. When the artists themselves go and share their art form or they offer their gift and they teach children, they're also learning a lot in that process. And that is why we also prefer working with younger artists. So that happens, you know, and of course then artists get some regular steady income also. So that's another aspect of it. But yes, in all our programs, actually, we are working with younger artists. How we usually do that is, unfortunately, again, the case right now is a little different and mostly events are not happening. But what happens is definitely Mandar, we have two other people working with us. We do attend a lot of concerts in the city and around, you know, wherever possible. So that is one thing that we definitely do to reach out to more younger artists. We of course have a lot of artists writing to us emails, and that's how we start conversing with them. So that is how we engage with younger artists. That is one of our programs, but there are a lot of other most important things is working with companies or working with, like, for example, how we've come at Auroville, for you know, so to engage with adults basically and conduct various workshops and intensives or, you know, immersive sessions, which basically bring out this aspect of practicing art form and how they, how all of us basically can better appreciate these art forms or learn for them for our own benefit. So we hold music appreciation sessions, Nadi workshops. So that's another thing that we do. We also curate a lot of music. We've been fortunate to receive and hold a copy of a beautiful archive that has music of great artists. And what we do is, through online exhibitions, we share that music with public, because that's how, you know, only if it's well curated can it reach the right audience. So our idea is to create exhibitions and playlists and put them on the website and to reach greater audience. And this curation is not only done by Mandar or me. Again, here is where we involve younger artists. So if you're a Rangiyar artist and you want to curate a playlist that you listen to, and so that can be done, you know, so that goes on our website. And plus, we also digitize a lot of material. We have a few people who are working on that aspect also. So there's a lot of archival material that gets digitized and processed a little bit so that, that it's there for posterity and for all of us to consume in various modern formats that exist. So we do that work too. And we've previously also worked on a couple of books, and we're also in process of working on a few books. So of course, those announcements will come. But yes, so books is one definite a thing that we work on, where we where the idea is to share stories of all these artists and people, you know, and to share their life stories with us, so that that in itself is inspiring enough, you know. So
and yeah. See what like we would love to do now, you know, like as schools will open up after whole COVID situation. If let us say you are an artist in some city or some village, you have a school nearby. And if you say, okay, I want to take responsibility for the school, I'll go, I will perform, I will go, I will teach kids there. I know other musicians who can come, who can, you know, perform there, who can do workshop. Just let us know and we will be very happy to support it monetarily, you know, from our side. So our whole idea is basically, you know, let people take charge for their, because you know, so much need there, you know, so we cannot cater everywhere. So just approach us and, you know, we have like some format ready for, you know, conducting a concert. So we don't do like harp and mala and, you know, all those things, because I think that is what distracts the younger generation a lot. You know? So we have a very simple format, you know, which anyone can implement in their school, and all the resources that you need to carry that out, that the foundation will take care of.
Beautiful. There's one question which is kind of curious to know, that what does seva or service mean to you?
I think it is something that has to happen very naturally. So I think if we go with that bhav of seva, you know, ki I am doing this as seva, we are already away from seva. So, and I think most of the times under the name of serving others, we are serving some of our interest, you know, in that sense. So I think what we look at seva is basically, it's just a gift, you know, like there is no expectation out of it.
And it's also, as you were saying, that it's spontaneous sharing. You are not actually thinking about it, that, okay, now this is what I'm offering as service. You're actually not thinking, you're just doing it.
Yeah. So like, for instance, this talk which is happening, I think for the first time, someone has so nicely written the bios, you know, otherwise the names are not correct, you know, so many things happen. And then you feel that, okay, people are doing service, but they have this feeling, I'm doing this as a service. But in this case, it's actually happening as, you know, like everybody is so lovingly doing it. So I think that's what is our idea of seva, you know, you, not because you are doing it for free, you are giving someone something, you just do it, you know. It's not like that. So what Kabir used to say, na, ki grahak raja ram hai. So Kabir would say that everyone who is going to wear this fabric is Ram. You know, I think so that attitude, that mindset we need to have towards service. And I think that's what we try to do.
Thank you. And we just have one last question. Apart from writing nice bios for you, how else can the service based community support you both? So if there's anything you'd just like to hear.
I think if you know fantastic musicians who need support, you know, who are doing good work, but you know, like they could be part of this our program, let us know. We will be very happy to, you know, incorporate them, make them part of this project.
if anybody would like to volunteer,
if you would like to volunteer, if you know any school, you know, where you would like music to happen, let us know, you know, we would be happy to do that. So yeah, I think and just keep continuing the good work that you guys are doing. I think that's also such a huge contribution to humanity. So yeah.
So thank you. Thank you very much. We would love this conversation to go on and on, but there is clock which is saying that now we have a few minutes left. So maybe we can end with another song or a bhajan from both of you. So thank you once again, both of you and all the volunteers at the back end who made this call happen, and more importantly, all the listeners who came together to co-create this space, all the beautiful questions. We have some more questions which we could not take, so maybe over email we will pass. You know, there are some people who are asking for recommendations of Spotify list of, you know, so many such things which can be even shared over email. We will kind of, you know, get in touch with you. But really, really grateful for this deeply enriching conversation from the heart, you know, covering both inner and outer, and kind of trying to, not even trying, it's kind of you're living it as one. So that comes across, you know, that how you dissolve this boundary of inner and outer, and you kind of have them merge and play along. And of course, it's a journey.
Thank you so much. To everyone at Service Space and all the volunteers and listeners who joined in today, and who especially volunteers, everyone who's doing this wonderful work. If there are any mistakes, they're ours and everything. So that's that. And yes, we'll definitely love to sing something.
Sing again in Kabir Subhachan, which is Naiya Mori Nike Nike Chalan Lagi. So the meaning of this bhajan is that our mind, if we are getting guided by our tiny little I consciousness, nothing is going to happen. But once we let that go, then Kabir says nothing will go wrong with your life. So it says, Naiya Mori Nike Nike Chalan Lagi. Your boat will sail beautifully through this river of life. He says, Andhi Megha Kachhu Nahi Vyape Chadhe Sant Badabhagi. You won't be afraid of the clouds and the storms. Nothing is going to happen. Uthale Rahat Dara Kachhu Nahi Nahi Gehre Ko Sansa Ulat Abhi Jaye To Bal Na Baka Vare Ajab Achamba. So this is analogy of a boat sailing. So he's saying, if the water level is low, nothing to worry about. If the water is very deep, you are not afraid. Even if your boat turns upside down, balanabhaka, your hair won't be damaged. Not a single hair would be damaged. In the last stanza, he says, kahe kabir jo bin sir khele. So khevat is the one who sails the boat. So Kabir says that one who sails his boat without his head, without his limited understanding, so yaha sumati bakhane, he will be available to this wisdom. Ya bahu hit ki akat katha hai birle khevat hi jane. He says ki rarely, you know, someone will come on this understanding in the life, that you don't need your tiny little brain to guide you in the life. You just let it turn off and see what happens.
Nikeli chalan lagi,
lagi lagi re lagi lagi re mori nikhe ke chana Naina mori naina mori nikeni chana. Uthale rahata daraka shunahi. Nahi gher ko sansaar ulta bhi jaye to baala baala baale ajab ye tamasa mori naiya mori nikeni ke chana lagi lagi re lagi lagi re mori nikeni ke chana. Kahika niraj jo binasi rakhe re binasi rakhe re soya sumati bakha ne ya bahuhita ki ya akatha katha binale kevat re jane naiya mori naiya mori nike nuke chane nike nuke chane nike nuke chane.
Thank you once again, everyone, for this enriching conversation, and I'm sure it will continue further ahead. So, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mandaran, Dakshaini, and everyone who was part of this call today.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.